Ready?
Folks, we'll get, call the meeting to order. The, I don't see Representative Dabney yet. We'll go to the, House File 403. Chair will move that, House File 403's committee report be adopted. All in favor, say aye. Any opposed? Seeing none, then Representative Johnson moves that House File 403 be recommended to pass. And, is this, it says, well, it's my understanding from the author, you want to go to the House floor with that?
That's correct,
All right, well, head on up. Oh, we have Representative Gardner in the room.
It's 403.
403, oh, I'm sorry. Representative Gardner, my apologies. We can't quite act on your bill anyway because we don't have a quorum yet, but we have Representative Johnson's bill in which I suspect there will be a tad bit more testimony than on yours. So we I'd like to get underway with 403. I'm sorry, with 813. You know, this is what happens when you start a meeting without a gavel. You just don't feel right from the get-go, do you? Well, at least we've adopted the committee report on House File 403. That's very special. And Chris tells me we're going to do that again anyway, too, because we didn't have a quorum. But House File 813, we have Representative Johnson will move that the committee report on House File 813 be adopted. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
We have a quorum yet? We do have a quorum. So that one really does pass. Then Representative Johnson will move that House File 403 be recommended to pass, referred to the House floor. That's 813 again. It's been misnumbered. House File 813, off to the floor is Representative Johnson's motion. Representative Johnson, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I'm just going to spend a few minutes talking about the bill. With me here is Ed Reynoso from Teamsters, who's be available for comments as well. We had a fairly extensive hearing on this matter, Mr. Chair, this past Friday in the Labor and Consumer Protection Division. I also note that we continue working on this bill with the Truckers Association to see if we can find some middle ground. What this bill does is addresses the problem of employers misclassifying employees as independent contractors in the trucking or courier industry. And we know it is a big problem. That's the deal. It's a big problem. For the past 3 years, Deed has audited 30 of the 67 local trucking or courier companies in Minnesota, and 35% of the cases, auditors have identified misclassified workers. Now, the opposition might refer to an OLA, Legislative Auditor's Report, from November 2007 that cites some stats from 2005 that only 3% were misclassified with respect to the transportation and warehouse industries. But that's old data. We're looking at some new information here, some new information from Deed that cites this 35% based on the audits they've done at the local trucking and courier companies. And I think it's very important to keep that in mind, how huge a problem it is and how it has been identified. Just to the bill, then, addresses the misclassifying problem in three basic ways. One, it changes the test when a driver has his own vehicle should be considered an independent contractor. And if you look at points 2.1 through 2.9, you'll see what I'm talking about. These factors are often referred to as the ABC test, and it's used in at least 18 other states in the trucking industry. And not only that, but a majority of states use the ABC test in determining whether an individual is an employee or an independent contractor for the purpose of determining eligibility for unemployment benefits, according to the U.S. Department of Labor. So the point is this is not a new or radical or unusual criteria, but in fact is used extensively throughout the country. Second thing it does, the bill calls on Deed, Dolly, and Department of Revenue to conduct sufficient audit to determine the extensive misclassification as well as shared data. And lastly, it permits workers to request employee status determinations on a confidential basis. That, in sum, Mr. Chair, is the bill that we have before us.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. Is your witness here to testify or just answer any questions that we may have?
Just to introduce myself and let you know that we are in full support of this bill. My name is Mr. Tremmen, members of the committee. My name is Edward Reynoso. I work for Teamsters Joint Council 32 here in the Twin Cities in the state of Minnesota, and we are here in support of House File 813. There was extensive testimony, as Representative Johnson had said in the subcommittee last week. I'm going to keep my comments very, very brief to give other opportunity to people that want to testify on this bill. But we are in full support of it. I handed out some information for every one of you. If you have any questions, I'm more than willing to stand for comment or any questions that you may have. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Reynoso. Thank you, Representative Johnson. With that, we've got a few other folks on the list that have indicated a desire to testify. And the first up is John Hausladen, and we got Bill Woosley. And the proponents of the bill took, it appears, about 6 minutes. I'm not going to hold the opponents to 6 minutes. But it's my understanding that the bill got a considerable hearing in the division, which is the purpose of the divisions. So I'm hoping to hear from both sides. Let's just try to say that we'll wrap up the testimony by 10:05, which gives us about 15, 20 minutes. And to the extent that you've heard testimony from somebody prior to you, you're more than welcome to say I share their concerns or something like that. With that, Mr. Hausladen.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is John Hausladen, and I'm president of the Minnesota Trucking Association. I have with me today Mr. Billy Woolsey, who is our elected chairman from Anderson Trucking Service, come down from St. Cloud, Minnesota. And I also have Jill Buell, who is with us, an independent contractor affiliated with Transport America, so we'll be testifying as a team. We have 700 member companies that are represented by our organization that have both employees and independent contractors, so we understand the issues from both sides. And we are here today to testify in opposition to House File 813. The supporters of this bill contend that there is a major problem of misclassification within the trucking industry and that their bill is their effort to resolve it. And we strongly disagree with both of these counts, and we'd like to offer just a few observations. And what you have coming out is the executive summary of the OLA report, which you see cited a lot. We should be clear about a couple things up front. When the OLA cites misclassification, that is a finding of one employee, a minimum of one employee in a company. It does not say there's rampant misclassification in any company. It says they found at least one. Another thing to be careful of is when we're talking about classifications within industries, and again, the author of the bill and the proponents are citing data from Deed, let's be clear, when a company is audited, that's of all employees. Could be an office worker, could be a secretary, could be a temporary worker, not just drivers. And so the data, and again, that's not public data, there's not a report for that, so again, we could take some issue with exactly what that data is saying. If we use the OLA report, though, you will note that that report shows that there's very little misclassification in the transportation industry. And in fact, the transportation warehousing industry showed the lowest percentage of misclassification. I would refer you to a chart, the last page, page 19 in your handout, where it shows the industries listed, and at the very bottom, underlined in red, it shows transportation warehousing at 3%. And I guess we find the strong argument can be made that this data shows that when you do have a clear, specific industry definition, as we do under unemployment compensation, that it actually reduces misclassification. And it just so happens then that the industry with the lowest incidence has that definition. And then those without that have higher errors. A second point is that the very premise of this bill flies directly in the face of the recommendations of the OLA. If you look on the right-hand side, it has recommendations, and it talks about coordinating and standardizing criteria. If you take a look at the preliminary sheet that we provided you on Side A, that's what is operative right now. Under workers' compensation, there's a 7-point rule. Again, I want to stress that's a rule. Under unemployment insurance, there's a statute. It's almost identical. It's missing one factor. And then for revenue, you have the IRS test. So right now, it is actually fairly close. But if you turn to Side B, if you adopt House File 813, now what you're doing is you're inserting this ABC test, and you're making it less similar, not more similar, which is exactly contrary to what the OLA report suggests. Third point that we'd like to make is that the ABC test is a very general test designed to be applied to all industries. It's not a trucking-specific definition. By its nature, it's overly broad. It's supposed to be overly broad. And as a consequence, it often causes more confusion than it does clarity with regards to trucking. And let's be clear what an IC is in the trucking industry. He or she is highly skilled. They are professionals. They have a sizable capital investment to purchase a truck. They run year-round. They can decide what load to take, what route to go. Ms. Buell will talk about that. And with that background, let me just walk you through a few brief examples then of the ABC test. So my question to you members of the committee is read the language in 813 and ask me if you understand it. And let me give you some real-life examples and you be the judge how you would interpret it. Factor A says that the individual must be substantially free from control. However, under federal law, the motor carrier must make certain that the IC satisfies various federal regulations. This includes drug testing, how you maintain the vehicle, maintaining laws, the standards for all of those things. And there are other federal leasing requirements that require the motor vehicle to have exclusive possession, control, and use of the equipment for the duration of the contract. Again, federal leasing regulations, which is just for the vehicle, has nothing to do determining whether someone's an employee or not, so it has to be an exclusive control and use for the duration. My question under point A then, factor A, is this control? And if it is, who's doing the controlling? It's certainly the federal government. It's not the motor carrier. Let's take factor B, which says the service must be performed outside the usual course of business or outside of all, and again, underscore all places where the service is performed. So let's take a scenario. Let's imagine that each of you are an independent contractor. You're going to live the dream. You're going to be in a truck like you want to do and see America, right? So you're in your truck. You're hooking it up to a motor carrier's trailer. We're going to call it Acme Transport. They own the trailer. And they're going to load it up. The trailer is already full of 3M products. And the 3M products are on a 3M distribution center. So your truck, Acme's trailer, 3M's product, but you're all doing business sort of in the same place where work is performed. Are you an IC or an employee? Under this definition, some could say, well, you're an employee because that's where that work normally takes place. Confusion. Point C says the individual is customarily engaged in an independently established trade and does not become unemployed when that relationship ends. Again, you're the IC. You're hauling products, plasma TVs for Best Buy. That's been your normal run, and you're hauling for Acme Transport, and you're getting paid so much per mile, but we have a recession. Best Buy says we're not selling as many plasma TVs. They tell Acme we don't need as many truckloads. Acme says, I'm sorry, IC, we don't need you now. We're going to terminate our lease with you. We're going to terminate our contract with you. Are you an employee or not? Because you're now, quote, unemployed in someone's definition, but you're really not. It's your own business on wheels. Now, in the last, and this is new testimony for those of you who heard this before, but I want to stress, it's been said the ABC test is bulletproof and it works everywhere and it's had no problems. But the ABC test is anything but clear and easy to understand. Courts in multiple states have taken up the ABC test in transportation-related cases, and each has struggled applying it. Most on point is an Arkansas case in November of 08. We're just talking months ago. In Mammo Transportation versus Williams, the Arkansas Supreme Court, that's how muddied this gets with ABC, the Arkansas Supreme Court was left to determine the proper classification of a truck driver. And the court needed, get this, three separate opinions because the judges couldn't agree on what that ABC test meant. Even Arkansas's Department of Workforce Services stated in its argument this issue was a difficult one for the agency. So get this, four justices in Arkansas stated the ABC test meant that all vehicles used by a motor carrier were places of business for the motor carrier. This is going to get confusing. Two justices stated the test meant all parts of all roadways were places of business for the motor carrier. And two justices stated that the test meant only physical buildings made up the places of businesses for the motor carrier. If the Arkansas Supreme Court can't figure out the ABC test, I ask you, how does passing this bring clarity to a problem that isn't a problem for the trucking industry in the first place. And fourth and last, we do agree with the auditor that there should be more consistency and better communication. We are going to introduce a bill that does just that. We think it's a better solution. But in the meantime, we urge you to reject House File 813. It is an answer in search of a problem and really would only lead to more confusion. And so I'd like to introduce our other two speakers then, Mr. Billy Woolsey, Mr. Chairman, who is our elected chairman of the Minnesota Trucking Association.
Thank you, Mr. Hauslan. You've left Mr. Woolsey 2 minutes.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, thank you, members of the committee. I'm Director of Operations for Anderson Trucking in St. Cloud, and as John said, I'm also the elected chairman of the Minnesota Trucking Association. ATS is a third-generation family-owned business in St. Cloud. We have about 2,000 drivers, 800 of those are employees, and about 1,200 of them are independent contractors. They're also supported by 350 office staff. I speak to you today from the perspective of the motor carrier. We're the ones that engage the independent contractor for their vehicles and services. Independent contractors have been a long part of the Anderson Trucking business model. Through negotiated contract, each party brings certain assets to the table. In short, we find the freight and provide the trailer, and they perform the service. We both understand our risks and opportunities. When times are good, they can do very well, and when times are bad, it allows us to detract from our fleet. And today, times are very bad in trucking. Many trucking companies are struggling for their very existence. In 2008, more than 3,000 trucking companies of all sizes left the industry. Today, what we're charging our shippers has been drastically cut, and it's the fall in fuel prices does not mitigate the loss of revenue. In these tough economic times, what businesses need more than anything is certainty. Certainty in our customer relationships, our ability to obtain financing, and most importantly, and certainty in our workforce. passing House File 813 will only create uncertainty. No longer will we or our current independent contractors be confident of the relationship we have due to this hazy ABC definition. Frankly, we just can't afford to take on more risk right now. By adopting the ABC definitions, we could wake up tomorrow with 1,200 employees with their associated tax and benefits costs. Let me stress that these are costs that the ICs are already paying, and they've built into their own business model. Adopting the ABC language would cause a major disruption. To manage our risk and exposure, we have no choice but to simply downsize our operations. Under that scenario, nobody wins, not the ICs, not ATS, not the support staff who would lose their jobs, not the customer, and certainly not the Minnesota economy. So Mr. Chair and members of the committee, in these tough economic times, businesses, both large and small, need certainty, and please vote no on House File 813.
Thank you, Mr.
2 minutes?
You did really well. Ms. Beal?
How many do I get?
Well, you can have as much as you
need. Thank you. Mr. Chairman, good afternoon, and the members of the committee. My name is Jill Buell. I'm Director of Leasing Services at Transport American, an Egan-based carrier. We have approximately 1,100 company drivers, and we have 280 owner-operators. And my responsibility at Transport is to manage the owner-operator programs there. But I also am an independent contractor. My husband and I own Tractor and Trailer. We're a Minnesota-based corporation here. He's in the truck right now doing what he's supposed to be doing. Like most independents, we choose to run our business for the same reasons that other self-employed people do, to make more money and to have the freedoms that self-employment offers. I'm sure that there are self-employed people here today. The better we get, the more money we make, and we do it without interference and dependency on others. Our business allows us to gain higher revenues with hard work and tenacity. If we run our businesses poorly, we'll be out of business. Contractors' risks are huge. Our tractor cost us $140,000. Our trailer cost us $42,000. We paid $95,000 in fuel last year, and we have $10,000 in required insurances. We pay our quarterly income taxes, and every single year I get a refund. We have major medical, work accident insurance, and we have kind of a poor retirement plan right now. The margins are very small in this industry. Costs make it imperative that we are very, very efficient. We need the carriers that we are leased onto. They're a huge piece of our ability to run our businesses. We depend on them to book our freight and give us the opportunities we need to keep our businesses alive. Together, the carrier and the independent form a true partnership. Transport America does depend on its independent contractors. Generally, we are safer, we meaning the independent contractor. Our on-time performance is by far higher. We have skin in the game. Our contract is clear and concise. Each party knows the expectations of the other. Who gets what, when they get it, who provides what, and at what level. My husband can choose the equipment he drives. He doesn't need to call anybody to get a headlight fixed. He can choose what freight he moves, and he can make the decision when he wants to come home. We could sell our truck and become a company driver. Risk would be less. He'd never have to crawl inside the engine again to make repairs. But in the honor of true entrepreneurialism, we choose this life. House File 813 takes a clear working document and condenses it into three muddy paragraphs, intentionally causing weak points and non-clarity into the current classification. The trucking industry has minimal misclassification issues for far less than other industries. We should be better served to enforce our current regs. And with all due respect, this statement is in desperate need of the committee's time and energy in other legislative matters. These are the reasons I am passionately requesting that we oppose House File 813.
Thank you, Ms. Bill.
Done.
And folks, I see there's another, I don't know, four or five individuals that have signed up to testify in opposition to the bill. We're happy to hear from, I said at the outset, we'll try to, I think the proponents took about 6 minutes. We try to take about 15 or 20 for those that wanted to testify in opposition. That said, I still don't want to cut people off. I don't feel right about doing that. So if your concerns have not been voiced by these very eloquent people at the table, and you still have something to add to that, I would ask that you come down and share those comments. If they have been voiced, then my suspicion is that most people would kind of like to get a sense where the committee is coming from and what kind of questions and concerns that people have. With that, I'm going to be quiet. Is there anybody else who desires to be heard that has something in addition to be said? Yes, sir. And all I'd ask is just identify yourself with when you come up and just do your best not to tread the same ground. New stuff, please. And thanks for coming.
Yeah, my name is Todd Peters. I currently am an independent contractor for Priority Courier. I've been doing this for 24 years as an independent contractor driving. I enjoy the freedoms my job gives me. Like I said, I've been driving 24 years, and I still enjoy my job. And the business right now, as they did say, that it is down, and just wanted to add it helps when the taxes are low. The businesses have more revenue to work with, so they can call us up and we can actually make a better living. Because, my revenues are down right now 30%. So. And I do work for Straight Commission, and I'm responsible for all my costs associated with operating my vehicle. And I get to deduct all the associated costs when I file for my taxes, which is a pretty good deduction. So that's one of the benefits I see. The problems with Bill HF 813 is it takes away my ability to earn a decent income, and it will reduce me to a minimum wage worker. If you look at Quicksilver Courier Company as a model, and they've been operating under this way for quite some time, that's what this bill will turn independent contractors into. And none of us will work for a minimum wage or less, because Quicksilver was fined $600,000 by the state last year for paying its employee drivers less than the minimum wage. And I don't know where I could find a job that pays me the kind of money I'm making now, especially in this bad economy. This bill is about taking away my freedom to make an honest living. I've never thought of myself as a victim, and I don't use the government to bully people I don't like the Teamsters are trying to bully us. The Teamsters are trying to destroy a whole industry by using the government. This will result in more home foreclosures and delinquent vehicle loans and a lot of unemployed people looking for a decent way to make a living. Because what we do by delivering goods when our customers need things as soon as possible help strengthen their businesses and the economy. If this bill passes, it will definitely hurt our customers and the economy of the state of Minnesota. So if you vote yes for HF 813, it will hurt me and my family, along with hundreds of or thousands of independent contractors. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Mr. Peters. And you're right, that wasn't new ground. Is there...
Yes, sir.
Hi, my name is Chris Weathers, and I come to you with a different perspective. I used to be a union member, Local 292 IBEW. I would go unemployment about 6 months of a year, $10,000 to $12,000 over the last 2 years before I joined Priority Courier Express. This money comes out of the taxpayers' pockets. Didn't come out of my pocket except through the taxes I paid when I was able to work. This bill, I feel, would lead to more unemployment because the employers, when they run out of work, lay people off. I pay my own business expenses. I say when I work, my boss, if you say, is my 10-year-old little girl up in the gallery. I feel very strongly about the fact that I support myself. I pay my taxes, my state taxes, my Social Security. My accountant has a field day with me. She laughs at me when I say, well, do I have to pay so much Social Security? You'll pay the maximum. Well, that's the way it is. That's why I chose her, because she is very good and she'll tell me what's good. I supply my own equipment. I set my work hours. I have the right to refuse runs should I feel like they're inefficient or not economically sufficient for my business to support itself. I have done that in the past. I will probably do it in the future. I do not feel that this bill will support the financial well-being of the state of Minnesota. And I've heard it bandied around through friends of mine who are still in the union, in different unions, saying that how Minnesota goes with this vote is a good indicator of where it will go from here. I feel like the money that we would lose by taking this as a state, just in unemployment benefits alone, should be strong enough to defeat this bill. I cannot understand where the attitude, the UAW, when they were told that they should meet the foreign competitors that are operating in the U.S., and yet they said, no, the American people will just have to support our decision not to change this. I'm sorry, such arrogance doesn't need to be expanded. Now, granted, that's UAW, not Teamsters. I've seen it through the IBEW. We all heard it national news, CBS, NBC carried it, what the UAW president said. I don't see that it will not happen again if we pass this bill. I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Weathers. Is there anybody else that has new or different arguments to make? Yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, I don't know if I'm going to cover the same ground. I'm eliminating much of what I was going to say because much of it is redundant. But I represent myself, Locking Enterprises. I'm not here at the payment of anybody, but...
And I assume you're Bill Locken.
I am.
All right.
I just wanted to mention that I do historical military reenacting. I take off the Friday before Memorial Day. I take off the Friday before Labor Day. I take off oftentimes the week of the 4th of July. As an independent contractor, I can tell my boss I'm not working that week. If I'm in a shop where seniority, I have to beg and borrow to try and get those dates, to get that free time to do that. I'm also a woodworker, making a little extra money on the side, which I do pay my taxes for my own Social Security. So if I've got a project coming up I need to work with a client, I can tell my boss, I need to be off at noon today. And they can't tell me, oh, sorry, you're going to have to work, and that sort of thing. So if that's redundant, I'm sorry. I just want to underline that as an independent contractor, I have my own expenses, I set my own hours, I set my own dates, and I get my vacation when I want it without somebody saying, no, you're going to have to apply for it and wait your turn. So this whole thing of putting this clamp on us and making us into a whole channeling different area of of how we can see our work. I hope you take a real look at that, that it means that it's going to change what we do. And again, you know, I turned down work to be here today. I turned down the last shot. I said, I got to go. But it's not about me turning down work. It's about me doing more work. Because as an independent contractor, I want to do more work. I want as much work as they can send me, as many jobs as they can send me. How many hourly employees is another boss? I'll take more work, boss. No, as an independent contractor, I want a lot of work, and I hope that you allow us to be able to do that. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Larkin. Anyone else that has new or different arguments on either side of this issue? Hey, Representative Johnson, do you have any final comments you want to share before we take questions or concerns from members of the committee? I see your phone-a-friend, as we call him, is back, just in case.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just briefly, I think it's important to get at the issue of independent contractors and the extent to which it changes or doesn't change with this bill. And I would like to call to testify Mr. Lee Nelson, the Chief Counsel of Deed, and have him offer his opinion as to how this particular bill would affect independent contractors.
All right. Mr. Nelson? Welcome back.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I am Lee Nelson. I'm the Director of Legal Affairs for the Unemployment Insurance Program, Chief Attorney for the Department of Employment and Economic Development. Let me tell you, I have argued numerous cases in the Minnesota Court of Appeals. I've argued a case in the Supreme Court on independent contractors. And a number of years ago, as an unemployment law judge, I decided hundreds of cases involving the question of the independent contractor. Talked with Representative Johnson about this bill, talked with the Truckers Association, talked with the Teamsters about this bill. But what I want to assure all the members in here in the audience, if an individual is truly an independent contractor under current law, this bill isn't going to make them an employee. They're going to be an independent contractor. Whether this bill does better than the current law, I think you can argue that all day long. This bill has its advantages and it has its disadvantages, and we're working with, you know, Representative Johnson on that, the Teamsters and the Trucking Association. But I just want to assure people that if an individual is truly an independent contractor under current law, truly an independent contractor, they are going to be an independent contractor under this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Nelson. Representative Johnson, anything else that you want to add before we take questions?
No, Mr. Chair.
Okay. I do have a couple folks on the list. I think Representative Zellers and then Hoppe and David.
Hoppe is for
Technology. Okay. Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't have a question for anybody. I think that...
Thank you, Representative Hoppe. Who's next? I'm sorry. Representative Hoppe.
You're not sorry at all.
No, but I said so.
I know. It makes me feel better. I think this was a bad idea last year. I think, if anything, it's a worse idea this year. I think it's unnecessary. I think in these economic times, it makes it an even worse idea. I hope we vote this thing down. I suspect it's going to pass, but Mr. Chair, I'd like a roll call on this this bill before us.
Thank you, Representative Hoppe. Representative David?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and to Chairman Johnson. I was just thinking maybe a little different angle here, if you could clarify something for me, in that I've got a farmer out there in Fillmore County who's got a lot of corn to harvest, and he hires an independent contractor to haul some corn for him, and he says take it to the Spring Valley elevator. He's directing him where to go with it. Is he an independent contractor, or is he now an employee?
Representative Johnson or Mr. Nelson? Or
well, I think
I see you're looking towards
Mr. Reynoso wants to answer, but I'll answer it after he does, I guess.
All right, Mr. Reynoso.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Davids, I believe he would be an independent contractor because the farmer is not, it's out of his regular course of business. He's not a trucker. He's a farmer.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative David, to the witness, it is his business to truck his corn or his commodities to the elevator. That is his business.
Mr. Reynoso?
Mr. Chairman, Representative David, he's a farmer, and we can construe it whichever way people want, but the reality is I think he would be considered a farmer, and he would, there are other factors also in the fact that control doesn't mean that he's asking a truck driver just to go from one place to another. Independent contractors are hired to perform a task, whether it's delivering a package, whether it's delivering corn. But I think the mitigating factor would still be the fact that he is a farmer.
Representative John.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative David, the only thing I would add, because I know you can provide, and I've heard it before, a lot of what-if situations, what-if this, what-if that scenario. But let me just tell you a little bit about what an auditor does and might provide some clarity to members. An auditor goes to a place of business where the person works. He observes the operations. He examines the records that are on file. He'll view the contracts. He'll review the vehicle arrangements, whether it's leased or what the arrangements are there. He'll speak to the management and to the employers. He'll have a survey filled out of the management and employers, and he takes all this information and makes a reasoned judgment or determination based on all these factors. So you have to consider all these factors in making a determination as to independent contractor versus employee, and these are trained professionals that do that. So that's how it goes. This isn't one single incident. It's taking a look at the total context and then fitting those dynamics, those factors, into the law that's before us.
Representative David, you have that quizzical look on your face, like you might have more.
I'll pass.
Okay. Representative Zeller?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Chairman, the original bill you said was to go right to the floor on your original motion.
You mean the one that I was so clear in making?
Yeah,
when we renew it, it's my understanding.
I was going with intent that it was this bill going that direction. I wasn't going to ask the numbers there, Mr. Chairman. But
it's House File 813, and the motion was to have it travel to the floor. Yes.
All right. Well, Mr. Chairman, before I ask Representative Johnson some questions, in Section 2 of the bill, the direction where we're going to have department audits, it says in here conduct sufficient audits of trucking employees and companies and trucking industry employees and companies. Now, if they're going to have to add a whole bunch of new audits, because this is, as Representative Johnson says, an issue run rampant across the state of Minnesota, shouldn't we have a fiscal note with a bill like this, Mr. Chairman? Shouldn't it go to the Finance Committee just to make sure that we're not going to ask, one or several departments to incur a whole bunch of new audits?
Thank you, Representative Zellers. Representative Johnson, are you aware of any of the fiscal chairs requesting the bill, or do you desire
No, there have been
where
no fiscal requests for this bill, and I assume that these departments could take it within their own
and
manpower or person power that they have.
And to that point, I believe that Mr. Nelson has a response to it as well. So if you don't mind, Representative Zellers, waiting 15 seconds for
no.
And Mr. Nelson, you're neither a Teamster nor a truck driver?
He's a farmer.
I used to be a union official.
I'll pass on the question.
Mr. Nelson, can you shed a little more clarity on that?
If I might just make a comment, the legislature abolished the union I was a officer in.
Help us do that.
Good God.
Was it hard?
Mr. Nelson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Zellers, the Department of Employment and Economic Development, the Unemployment Insurance Program, under our federal grant, is required to audit 2% of all employers in Minnesota each year. That's 3,000 employers that we audit, 3,000 businesses. If the legislature directs us to target and focus all 3,000 of those in one particular place, we will target those 3,000 in one particular place. Can't imagine that that's what we would do under this particular bill, the 3,000, but we would presumably direct more audits in that industry.
Yeah. But Ms. Nelson, this, just to the point of the fiscal impact, this doesn't change the number of audits that will be performed. It just requires that a quote-unquote sufficient number be performed in this area.
In, Mr. Chairman, or Ms. Zellers, in reading this bill, I don't see that we would perform more audits than that $3,000. We wouldn't hire any more auditors. We would simply direct a portion of those $3,000 more towards the trucking industry as directed by the bill.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Nelson. Representative Zellers, good question.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you. That doesn't bring me any more comfort. So then we're going to skip audits in other industries just to focus on this one industry. And from my practical experience, I think that's for us to be that prescriptive. I think leaving it up to you to audit 2% wherever it may be, and wherever the requests come in, wherever the if there's trouble industries, that we should be there first, not. And reading the bill, it says, sufficient out of the trucking industry employers. I think that is directing you to just focus just on that industry. And Mr. Chairman, I just think we're gonna have a cost in this. And the news of the budget today is bad enough the way it is. I don't know that we need to add a whole bunch of audits on top of our employers. The independent contractors that are in the room are now going to have to be waiting at home by their phone to see when big government's coming by to do the next audit and the next audit. And it's your motion, Mr. Chairman, but I do think this should go to the Finance Committee, because I do think, and Representative Johnson, I don't know if you've asked for a fiscal note, but I do think one should be requested, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Zellers. Did you have other questions? I've got Representative Sanders and Representative Anderson that all said questions, but I don't want to go away from you.
No, that's fine, Mr. Chairman. I can wait for a little bit.
Okay, and Representative Anderson, I believe, I don't know if you were first with your hand and up, but... Okay. Then Representative Sanders.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Johnson, I asked this question in the vision, but I've had several conversations with folks this week, which I really couldn't answer the question, so I'm going to ask you again. According to the ABC test or the 1-2-3 test, number two, the question is if, as the language is written out, services performed outside of all the places of business of the enterprise. So the question is, if somebody has a product in their truck and they load it or unload the product, are they considered an employee or an independent contractor? Because I had several calls of people being concerned about that definition.
Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Sanders, like I suggested to Representative Davis, they're going to look at the whole context of the working environment and the whole history of what this person is doing. They're not going to look at one isolated behavior on one given day. They're going to look at the whole package. They're going to speak to the employer. They're going to speak to the employee. They're going to look at the records. They're going to look at the operations and put into the whole context and then match it up with what the bill says.
Representative Sanders.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The cause for great concern that I have and that these other independent contractors have is that in line 1.12 it says that each of the following factors is present, but then in line 2.4 the word or is there. So the way the language is written in this, basically it does say that if the service is performed outside of all the places of business of the enterprise, that is just one criterion. That is, if they violate that, it appears to me that they would be labeled an employee because they are not meeting all the clauses of the three provisions of this. And the real cause for concern is we heard a couple testimonies where we heard the phrase, well, I think you'd be classified as an independent contractor or an employee. And these people are playing by the rules and they're trying to, but it causes great concern when they look at the legislation and they just can't simply tell. Or if they are violating one part of this by unloading or loading their product, it appears to me that they'd be in violation of that provision.
Representative Johnson, any response to that? To that point, though, do you share Mr. Nelson's point of view that, and I put a great deal of credibility in what he says because this is what he does on behalf of the state. Is it the author's intent and the author's expectation that if somebody is truly operating as an independent contractor now and meeting the factors that they would remain an independent contractor under your legislation?
That is correct, Mr. Chair. That's the intent and that's my understanding is the effect.
Okay. Are there other questions? And Representative Sanders, I didn't mean to cut you off. Did you have... All right. Other Representative Eller.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And the intent is one thing, but again, and we had this discussion in the division about, and actually we had discussion last year to the bill that, you know, what happens if, is it the load of rock or is it the per aggregate weight, and that into it, and from what we can read in legislation, we've gone backwards again from that. So that fight is still out there versus the total load versus the load of just, you know, one rock at a time. But Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we've been through this before, and the governor vetoed this last time. Unfortunately, the chairman did not work over the interim with any of the players, the folks that are in this room here, the Truckers Association. There wasn't an attempt at peace in the valley. So, Mr. Chair, members, we have no recourse whatsoever but to recommend that this be vetoed again, and not just on fight because he didn't call the folks on the other side, but the hundreds, literally, of members, not just from my district, not just from members' district, from all over the state, who called us and said, we read the bill, we read the language, we talked to our business managers, our lawyers, the professional people who work for us, and have looked at this and said, it will put us out of business. Now, we can go on, again, what we've heard in the committees, as Representative Sanders said, I think, and that's not the intent, but the people who are the professionals in the industry have looked at it and said, no, you'll put us out of business. And I shared this with you last week, Chair Johnson, that there's a business guy in my district who hires all the union employees, 200 union truck drivers. They haul aggregate out of the gravel pits, which are, you know, big old holes in the back end of my district. During the summer months, he needs to hire a bunch of new independent contractors. He said, with the tough economic times right now, he said, I don't have the money to buy another 100 trucks, to go out and hire another 150 truck drivers to drive those trucks. So one of two things can happen. He may or may not get the contract. And if he doesn't get the contract over the summer, he may or may not have to then fire union employees. These aren't just the non-union independent contractors we're talking about here in the room. These are union employees that could lose their jobs. Now, if that's the risk you want to take on the bill, that's fine. But I don't think this has been vetted. I don't think you've worked with the people in the room to say, here's the standard we're applying. And if there's one thing in talking and going through email after email and listening to these folks, is that it's the exact opposite of what you're claiming is to do, is to bring clarity to the bill. You're bringing nothing but ambiguity, confusion, and oh, by the way, Big Brother's going to be at your door. He's coming to audit you. Look out tomorrow. Anybody in here with a blue shirt, a white shirt, whatever it may be, we're going to come and audit you because we think that you may or may not be, again, may or may not be an independent contractor. In tough economic times, you know, the folks that are doing this work, they've chosen to do this work because they either want to spend more time with their family, they want to make a bigger income than they could have as a full-time employee. This is a choice they've made. Don't punish them for making a choice on their own business. Mr. Chairman, members, I, again, encourage the committee to vote this down. And again, Mr. Chairman, renew my request to go to a finance committee because I do think there's a fiscal impact to the state of Minnesota.
Thank you, Representative Ellers. Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Johnson and Mr. Nelson, if this legislation won't change who currently is and isn't an independent contractor, why do we need it?
Mr. Nelson.
Mr. Chairman,
I think the clapping was actually for me, right? We don't actually do that, though. It's not a sporting event, but
I assume that
meant you probably agreed with Representative Hoppe's question. My guess is that Mr. Nelson has a pretty on-point answer to that because I've heard that question asked before. Mr. Nelson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hoppe, as I indicated before, if an individual is truly an independent contractor, I believe that's the word that said, clearly an independent contractor, many of the relationships are not clear. That's why there are hundreds of court cases on this issue going. And current law doesn't prevent, you know, the issues from arising. And all I said was under this particular bill, you know, an individual who is clearly an independent contractor under current law will be an independent contractor under this law. The question becomes those ones which aren't clear, which are gray. And, you know, some relationships are clear, black or white, but others are gray. And, you know, That's all I'd indicated. This bill, in some ways, is a substantial improvement upon current law, and in other ways, it raises some issues. But, on balance, an individual who's clearly an independent contractor under current law will be an independent contractor under this bill.
And thank you, Mr. Nelson. With due respect to everybody that has a concern about this, and we'll give you an opportunity to represent a copy. We do have four other bills on which people have come to the committee today to be heard as well, and we've got about 35 minutes left. So I'm going to give Representative Hoppe, because he had his hand up, a final word. Representative Johnson, I'll make some observations, then we're going to vote. Representative Hoppe?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be brief. Two quick questions for Mr. Nelson. One, will this lower the number of cases in Minnesota? And two, would the FedEx driver that now considers himself an independent contractor be affected by this legislation?
Ms. Nelson?
Mr. Representative, Mr. Chair, Representative Hoppe, first of all, I don't know the facts involving FedEx, so I can't make a judgment regarding FedEx. You have to look at the individual facts regarding the relationship. So I can't make a judgment. FedEx, I don't know how FedEx operates. I mean, I hear stories, but, I don't decide cases based on stories or newspaper articles. I decide cases based on the facts presented in a contested case situation. As to whether there'll be more, more cases arising, I don't know that.
Okay, Representative Johnson? Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Hoppe, follow up.
Sorry, Mr. Chair, I'm just wondering if Representative Johnson knows about the FedEx question.
Okay, Representative Johnson, maybe in your final wrap-up here, you can try to address that issue as well.
Well, I would just say the same thing that's been said along. If you're an independent contractor now, truly, you'll be one after this bill moves forward.
Okay. Representative Johnson, any other points to make? Otherwise, I'll share a couple observations I have, and then we'll... Is that all you need to say?
That's all I need to say.
All right.
Mr. Chair.
First off, I want to appreciate, I do appreciate everybody that took the time to share their thoughts and comments both prior to today, as well as to take the time out, even if it's your own time, to come and be heard with respect to the issue today. We do give great deference to the division's efforts, and Representative Dabney, Chairman Dabney, moved this bill through. We actually spent more time on it than I had anticipated doing, and I think, nonetheless, I think it was time very well spent. And I think the author heard, Mr. Nelson heard, Mr. Rialso, and everybody heard what the concerns are. Representative Johnson has assured us that he will continue to work with Mr. Nelson from the department on even more clarity to satisfy the concerns that have been raised. I noted that there's an understanding, or it's my understanding now, that the truck industry will have a bill it intends to introduce. And we may well progress that bill in this committee as well, but I would expect the author to take a look at that bill and see what he's able to incorporate with respect to it. And it also bears noting that the author, as well as Mr. Nelson, are probably two of the most highly regarded, one a member of the legislature, one nonpartisan in his work, and that they've both assured that they plan to continue working on trying to seek even greater clarity. And then the final point, that if you're truly an independent contractor, this isn't going to make any difference. You'll still remain an independent contractor. With those things in mind, I'm confident moving the bill forward. I also would note, Representative Johnson, the governor vetoed this almost exact same language last time. My expectation is that he'll probably sees the exact same language this time. You'll get the same result. And there's that old line about insanity is doing the same thing and expecting a different outcome. I think you know the outcome if you go forward with the language as is. But I trust that you've heard the comments and concerns that people have made, and hopefully we'll find a bill on the House floor and through the Senate that takes those factors into account. I do know one thing right now, and that is we have a very unclear situation. As Mr. Nelson says, we've got hundreds of cases each year, or hundreds of cases have been decided with respect to it. If there's something that truly can make everybody's lives a little bit more clear when it comes to independent contractor status, I think everybody would be happy to see that come. But it's got to be something that the governor can sign and something the legislature can pass. With that, we've asked Representative Hoppe ask for a roll call. Clerk, call or roll. Atkins?
Aye.
Anderson?
No.
Anvils?
Aye.
Davids?
No.
No.
Dabney.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Hoppy.
No.
Hosh.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Knuth.
Aye.
Lilly.
Aye.
Mullery.
Aye.
Murdoch.
No.
Sanders.
No.
Simon.
Aye.
Slocum.
Aye.
Tao.
Aye.
Zellers.
No.
Motion carries 12-6. Thank you, Representative Johnson. Again, for the record, was House File 813. It moves on to the floor, and there were no amendments to it. Next up, Representative Gardner is back. This is the one for folks that were here early. You heard me try to move this bill. As he's coming up, Representative Knuth will move the minutes to the February 24th, 2009 meeting. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, seeing none, that's carried. Representative Gardner, the chair will move that House File 403 be recommended to pass. Actually, we've got a committee report, which I believe we adopted earlier. Is that? We didn't have a quorum at the time. So I'll again, the chair, actually, Representative Dabney, this came through your committee?
Yes, it did, Mr. Chair.
Chairman Dabney will recommend or move that the committee report on House File 403 be adopted. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, that motion carries. Representative Dabney will then move that House File 403 be recommended, passed, and referred to the Committee on Civil Justice. Representative Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have an office amendment to make some minor technical changes.
Okay, Representative Dabney offers the A4 amendment to put it in the shape in which the author desires to proceed. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, seeing none, the motion carries. Representative Gardner, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Now that the trucking folks have left the room, I'm waiting for the people from the rich and powerful compost lobby to arrive in the room. So
there's now room for them. Okay. They're just working their way in.
Mr. Chair, House File 403 seeks to provide metro-wide consistency as it relates to how yard waste is disposed in the Twin Cities metro area, with a double win here. One is that compost site operators, both public and private, who generate compost from yard waste will have something that's saleable instead of something that has no value, and our budding bioplastics industry here in the United States, in Minnesota in particular, would see some added success. Mr. Chair, Section 2 is actually what would be within the purview of this committee. Shall I just confine my comments to that section?
Please.
Section 2 actually has to do with standards for labeling plastic bags. Now, I've just discovered in committees that people find this subject to be a little weird when you talk about compost, so I'll just get out there right away and use the W word. Members, we have an interesting problem in the Seven County Metro where we've banned yard waste for 20 years from landfills, and so it's stored in above-ground facilities, compost sites. Many of you have them in the suburbs in the Twin Cities. The problem is that you get bits of plastic in them and they fly all around. Two yard waste sites in Carver County have closed because of litter complaints, and the resulting compost actually is a saleable commodity, but if it has plastic in it, it isn't really worth much of anything, and the people who actually use it, such as companies that use the compost blowing machines and Invergrow pipes and elsewhere, can't use it. The bill here would require that any bag that is labeled as compostable must meet an ASTM standard for compostability. There actually is an ASTM standard for compostability. There is no technical or scientific standard for the word biodegradable. And this is the crux of Section 2, is that we've got bags being sold that claim to be biodegradable, such as this one. This is where my Star Tribune comes in. And they actually do not, they break down, but they do not completely dissolve. And so you're left with a residue. If it ends, at least if this is a compost bag, you would have something that you would contaminate your compost. So I'm trying to send a uniform signal to retailers that these bags can be carried. This is something that Dakota County has had in ordinance for the last 15 years, so it's we haven't seen anybody with their torches and pitchforks and tar and feathers come to the county commission on this one. This would apply just to Seven County Metro. I did talk to the Minnesota Retailers Association this afternoon. Representative Zellers asked me to check into that, and they said they did not have any problems with the bill, especially after the suggestion that Representative Sanders had about the effective date to make sure that current stocks of this material would be able to be sold until they're done. Mr. Chair, that's kind of it. There is a penalty in there, and that's why it's going to civil justice.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Gardner.
and it helps to have 15 years of experience with it in Dakota County, where you're right, we haven't seen pitchforks and torches being mounted against
it. Let me ran on the compostable bag.
That was one of my key planks of my platform, yeah. Let me ask you this. Is there anybody here to testify in opposition to the bill? Or Representative Gardner, are you aware of any opposition to the bill?
I am not. We had one technical change which took care of issues in the Environment Committee. I know of no organized opposition to the bill, okay. And my technical testifier couldn't make it.
Okay. And are there questions or concerns from members of the committee? Otherwise, Representative Zellers, no. Anderson?
Oh, Zeller. Oh, I was just going to ask Mr. Chair that for some reason it slipped through us in the last committee, but why just the 7-county metro? Aren't we one Minnesota, Mr. Chairman?
No, we're not.
Representative David. Representative David says no. Representative Gardner.
Mr. Chair, the way yard waste is managed in Greater Minnesota is a little different. I would say this came out in the Senate yesterday. I thought it was quite handy. This bill also helps avoid littering Greater Minnesota with yard waste from the Twin Cities area. That's actually been part of the problem. We've had plastic-laden waste that goes outside the 7-county metro and we get plastic all over the place. So I'm just trying to peel off votes with Greg, Representative David, my seatmate here. So.
Well, Representative Zellers, careful. You have the eyebrows up on your next-door neighbor there.
If fitting my waste ends up in David's district, there's going to be problems other than just the bill. Mr. Chairman, I'm still smarting from that whole Twins deal where the other 86 counties got to decide for us one county how things were supposed to be. So I guess if it's good for one, it should be good for all. But deference to the former chair, I guess we'll leave well enough alone and be two Minnesotas.
Thank you, Representative Zellers. Representative Anderson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Gardner, what's the price difference between the biodegradable bags and the bags that homeowners currently use?
I was wondering that too, Representative Gardner.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, it does vary. It depends on the size and the brand. Some heavy-duty, hefty bags that are kind of bomb-proof petroleum-based plastic actually can cost up to a dollar, or you can get something that's sort of inferior, which is about 10 or 20 cents. The compostable bags range anywhere from, I'd probably say, 20 to 85 cents. It depends on the size. I would mention that your waste haulers that take away your yard waste, are charged a greater fee at the yard waste compost site if there's plastic bags in it, regular plastic bags. So the haulers have actually expressed an interest in this bill because then they wouldn't have their competitors undercutting each other saying, oh, I can take your yard waste for cheap, whether it's in plastic or not, and then they end up taking it to the couple of sites that still take the plastic. So in theory, if you would see an increase if you use the bags, new bags, it's offset by the lower tip fee that's used for the hauler. I should point out that if you have a paper bag, that's not covered by this. That's already compostable. If you use a cart, as some of us do in the suburbs through yard waste, that's fine. That just goes into the back of a packer truck and off it goes to the site. There's no container, no film left in it.
Representative Anderson?
So in Dakota County, you've seen that for sure you're going to get that tip credit, so to speak, of using. I'm guessing that some of those haulers might just keep it at the current level and not reduce it if you're using different bags.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, I think your suspicions might be correct. I suspect some of you are still paying a fuel surcharge in your hauler bill for high gas prices, which may not be charged. However, since the private sector is the one that operates most of the hauling operations, that's really proprietary data on how they decide to charge you. And the alternative would be for the government to operate the hauling sector and decide what the price is, and that's a whole other can of worms, which I don't think you want to get into.
Oh, I was, you know, I quiet these guys, and then you do that. Representative Anderson, does that seal the deal? Anybody else with questions or concerns? Otherwise, Representative Badman will renew his motion that House File 403 be recommended to pass as amended and referred to the Committee on Civil Justice. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
No.
A couple opposed, but it still prevails. Thank you, Representative Gardner.
Thank you,
sir. Have fun in civil justice. Next up is House File 549. Representative Dabney moves that the committee report on House File 549 be adopted. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, that motion carries. Representative Dabney, next moves that House File 549 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Civil Justice. Representative Dabney, your bill.
Thank you, Chair Atkins. Good evening, members. In deference to the time in the committee's agenda, I will attempt to be brief, although you know that's not my strong suit. I don't need to tell members that these are very difficult times for our state and for our constituents. Many of them are struggling with various forms of debt, and in the face of layoffs, in the face of a struggling economy, in the face of stagnant wages and rising health care costs over the last decade, and in the face of a last I saw, crumbling stock market. In 2007, this legislature passed statutes governing debt management organizations. I carried the legislation here in the House, Representative Scheid in the Senate, the same authors for this debt settlement legislation this year. That legislation in 2007 passed 130-0 out of the House and 64-0 out of the Senate. The regulation that we placed for debt management is working. In those negotiations late in the game, the debt settlement industry came to us and asked to be included in the regulation. We were not comfortable with that, believing correctly that debt management and debt settlement are different beasts and need to be regulated then in different ways. The debt settlement bill that you have before you does a number of things. It requires that all debt settlers be registered with the Department of Commerce, that they have a written contract with the consumer, that they engage in a preliminary analysis as to whether this is suitable for the particular consumer, and requires notice to the consumer whether the creditors are willing to participate, prohibits false and misleading promises and abuse of business practices, and establishes additional consumer protections to prevent abuse, and provide strong enforcement mechanisms, including the right of the consumer to go to court with the violator. I want to run down the broad coalition that is in support of this bill. It includes the Minnesota Attorney General's Office, that will speak shortly, the Minnesota Bankers Association, the Independent Community Bankers Association, the Minnesota Collectors Association, that always makes me think a little humble figures, but it's actually the debt collectors, the Minnesota Credit Union Network, Legal Aid, Lutheran Social Services, and the nice people at U.S. Bank. I have today Jeff Harrington from the Minnesota Attorney General's Office and Gerald Dahlheimer, Manager of Financial Counseling at Lutheran Social Services, to offer brief testimony in support of the bill. In addition, Mr. Ron Elwood from the Legal Aid is here to answer any questions. I'd like now, Mr. Chair, to hand it to Mr. Harrington.
Thank you, Representative Dabney. This bill did come through division, so to the extent you can keep your remarks brief, we'd appreciate that. Gentlemen, to your bill.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Jeff Harrington. I'm an Assistant Attorney General with the Minnesota Attorney General's Office. Thank you for conducting this hearing on this very important issue. First off, the Attorney General's Office has worked with this broad coalition and Representative Dabney here, and this office is in support of this bill. As was alluded to earlier, in this tough economic times, consumers are facing a lot of challenges. And some consumers are trying to do the right thing, and they're engaging in what are called debt settlement companies. There are problems that we are seeing with these debt settlement companies. Consumers are charged stiff upfront fees, but are often not provided with any services. Consumers are often advised to stop paying their creditors, but they're not informed that doing so could subject them to higher fees, penalties, even lawsuits. And consumers also are very confused over whether the creditors are getting paid at all. This bill provides some many common sense protections for consumers, such as a written signed contract, a cap on fees, and required disclosures and warnings about the effect of stopping your payments with creditors, the fees and the interest will accrue, and you may be sued. In sum, the Attorney General's Office supports this bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Harrington. Mr. Dahlheimer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Darrell Dahlheimer, the Program Director for Lutheran Social Service Financial Counseling. I've been proud to be at LSS for 10 years doing direct service with consumers in need of any help at all with debt budgeting, practical consumer money management. And we stand as a neutral nonprofit in the financial services marketplace.
I would like to just share a story that I think that the committee members may help illustrate the issue to make it more real, and then to offer my support for this bill, House File 549. The story I would like to just share is one of my own clients that I saw. I've seen 3,000 clients in Minnesota, so maybe I'm the most qualified in terms of actual on-the-ground financial counseling with debt here. But I think his story is illustrative. So briefly, a 50-year-old father who had gone through a divorce and had custody of his two children was working full-time, had, as many consumers do, a lot of credit card debt. In his case, about $10,000 to $11,000 of credit card debt, and chose to go through the debt settlement industry using a debt settlement service, who immediately coached him as their primary help to him to stop paying the debts and to stop talking to the creditors. That's the strategy of many debt settlement services, strategy of the industry. The results were what we knew they would be, which is that the client came to us after the creditors had obtained a judgment in civil court, and with that judgment now had the power to do garnishment at $260 per month of this man's paycheck for the single creditor. So he had $10,000 credit card debt. One single creditor successfully achieved a garnishment of $260 per month. Meaning for this person, the ability to pay the debt was severely compromised, and when they came to us, they were so discouraged, they were absolutely headed down the bankruptcy path, and we tried to talk to them about other ways that would be less impactful about hurting the creditor, hurting themselves and their own credit rating. But the piece I would like to highlight out of this, the theme of the story, so to speak, and I'm giving you a typical story as opposed to an exaggerated story, which I could also give you plenty of examples that are more egregious. Typically, number one, the debt settlement service industry's coaching is to stop paying and stop contacting creditors. And when that happens, it moves to civil legal action by the creditors very often, leaving the person trapped with a very disappointing credit rating, meaning that they have a judgment or a garnishment, which is disastrous for credit. In addition to that, they have, even in the cases of successful debt settlement, a rating on their credit that's recorded as, quote, settled for less than full balance, which is also counted severely against them on the FICO score. Finally, just to highlight, as this story points out, use of debt settlement services often leads to increased bankruptcy filings and a decrease in legitimate options, meaning that when they come to us after a debt settlement service experience, it's too late for the legitimate nonprofit consumer credit industry because these people are already in deep legal action or all the debt is charged off and not able to go back to good credit. So, in sum, I would just like to say that I believe this bill, as I understand the provisions, is a parallel bill to the debt management bill that was passed, meaning that it allows real sunshine in for the consumers. It allows them to know the contract terms. It allows the bad players in the industry to be registered, everyone to be registered with Commerce, so there's actually some teeth to deal with bad players, and it deals with suitability and disclosure. Simply put, this lets legitimate players play and the illegitimate players be regulated. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dahlheimer. Representative Dabney, do you have anybody else in support of the bill that you want to hear from?
No, I do not. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Is there anyone else who desires to testify with respect to the bill? Are there questions or comments from members of the committee?
Mr. Chair, Ms. Keenan from the U.S. Office of Bankruptcy Alternatives, how do you do? Is approaching closer. A nice woman from Texas who's made some keen observations of the difference of in weather between here and Texas. I think it's fair to say that there's been a number of conversations between members of the coalition and her organization in the last week. I think some positive conversations and some good discussion has emerged from that, and we appreciate that conversation and the openness.
Thank you, Representative Dabney. Ms. Keenan?
Thank you very much, Chairperson Atkins and committee members. I'm happy to be here again, even though there is still snow on the ground, and my flight is about to leave, so who am I staying with tonight? My name is Jenna Keenan, and I am the Executive Director of the United States Organization for Bankruptcy Alternatives. We have about 140 members, member companies in the debt settlement industry. We are very, very pleased that a bill has come up here in Minnesota that will regulate our industry. As you guys know, and as you heard from previous speakers here, there are certainly problematic issues in this industry, and we are absolutely proponents of getting them out of this industry. It makes my job easier, my company's job easier, and protects your consumers, and that's what we're looking to do. This bill is very well written, very, very thoughtfully written, specifically for our industry, which is very unusual at this stage of the game. Most states, I'm not sure what they're writing for, a plumber or something, but this was certainly written directly for us, and we're very, very happy that that you guys are in support of regulating our industry. Now, as far as the concerns go, and of its sponsor Dabney, let you know that we are discussing a couple of key issues, and even though we're in support of 95% of this bill, there is the 5% that unfortunately is a huge 5% of the bill, and as written, if passed as written, it would put the entire industry out of commission in this state. There are a couple of clarifications I wanted to make that were brought up earlier. the story about the debt settlement, unfortunate debt settlement incident, first of all, as far as a consumer who has a choice in debt relief options, there are three tiers. We have credit counseling, we have debt settlement, and we have bankruptcy. In our opinion, none of those are appropriate for the other. We turn people away all of the time. And to say that the person came to a debt settlement company and then was so bad off they couldn't be helped then by a credit counseling agency, I would venture to guess that that person was not dealing with an ethical debt settlement company, which is exactly what we're hoping you guys can help us with. We are absolutely hopeful by our discussions with the sponsors and their agreement to work with us to make something, make the changes necessary that allow us to continue to help your consumers. As consumer protection is absolutely the foundation that we're moving forward from, and if it doesn't protect them, then we wouldn't support it in the first place. Just a couple of things, I think misconceptions that you guys should know about, and I'll make it very brief. We tell consumers to stop paying their bills. We accept every consumer that contacts us, regardless of their suitability or ability to afford the program. We charge all of our fees up front and rarely actually provide any services. We make promises we can't or don't keep, and on Mondays and Fridays, we kick small kittens first thing in the morning. These are not ethical company guidelines. We will ban that in the bill. Keep that in mind. The people that you're hearing from have been mistreated by an unethical company. That is not who we want to protect. We want to get rid of them and eliminate them. So as soon as these changes are made, we would be happy to be on that beautiful list of distinguished supporters of this bill, and we welcome the opportunity to work with you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Keena. Ms. Leffa.
My name is Val Leffler. I am a part owner in a company that does marketing for a debt settlement company out of Mendota Heights. I provided everybody with a script from our company. I did not provide magnifiers for everybody. I apologize for the small print. I did some checking today. Over the last 3.5 years, we have approximately 12,000 clients that we have enrolled in our program, and we're a member of the Better Business Bureau, and we currently have zero unresolved complaints. We want regulation. We want registration. We want licensing, because when you hear some of the ads we hear on TV and radio, we can't compete with them because we're trying to tell the truth. And when you tell the truth, our story is not near as good as theirs. So we are, again, would love to support the bill. There are some issues like Ms. Keenan referred to that we'd like to address. I just wanted to share with you just kind of what we do. I gave you the script here just so I could take 1 or 2 minutes to cover it with you, if you wouldn't mind taking it out. It's the one with the different colors on it.
Mr. Leffler, if you're a local guy, neighbor of mine in Mendota Heights, but if you can go really fast, we still got one more bill yet.
All right. What we do is we talk to the person, we find out what kind of debt they have. If you see they're up below the blue line, we do a budget with them. We make sure that this is something that they're appropriate for. What we find out is some people have lots of money and they should be doing a consumer credit counseling program. Some people don't have enough money and they would be candidates for ours, and some people don't have any money and they're headed for bankruptcy. So we do a budget with them. We do some underwriting. We take them through how the program would work. If you notice, this person had a $1,500 a month credit card payment, and after doing their budget, we set it at around $800.
That would get them done in about 37 to 47 months on that payment. That would save them about 25 to 40%. On the next page, we go through the negatives. Look, it's going to affect your credit. Your creditors are going to call. You got to give up your credit card. This is not going to be easy. And when we cover that with them, then we go through who their creditors are and how much interest they're paying. And then we do, on the last page, we actually, after they decide this is what they want to do, we call them back. And we go through the negatives again on a recorded line. We want them to know this is financial rehab. This is not going to be painless. It's going to be one step back, so you can take two steps forward. So, again, we're in favor of licensing and registration. We would like to know who the people are that some of the others have mentioned, but if you pass it the way it is, it would put basically all of us out of business.
Thank you, Mr. Leffler. There are questions or concerns? I should ask, is there anyone else who desires to be heard with respect to it? Are there questions or concerns from members of the committee? And Representative Dabney, I trust you've been working closely with these nice folks for quite some time and have a good understanding what their concerns are. So with that, Representative Dabney renews his motion that House File 549 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Civil Justice. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Dabney. Next up is Representative Lilly's bill. Representative Lilly will move that House File 978 be recommended to pass. Representative Lilly, to your bill. I believe we passed this one last year.
Yes, we did, sir.
Thank you, Representative Lilly. To your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 978 basically ensures that the relationship that exists now with repair shops in Minnesota stays the same. One of the current relationship and the current thing that exists in our marketplace right now is essentially threefold. You have consumers, you have insurance companies, and then you have independent repair shops. So what House File 978 does is around the country there's some concerns that insurance companies have decided to get into this industry of having their own repair shops. And one of the fear is that,
That's a bad sign.
Maybe the truckers are bad. So it minimizes the incentives for perhaps people that are repairing your cars to cut corners. Right now they're passing out a letter. We have support from the auto dealers in Minnesota and also a letter, I believe, from the auto repair shops. And then I have Mr. Stoneover that is a local business owner, and maybe he can kind of state a little quick story. I know we're short of time, but I'm sure he can be brief. He has endured much today.
Mr. Stoneover, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Mike Stoneover. I'm president and CEO of Stoneover Body Works. We have locations in Stillwater and Shoreview. And today I'm testifying on behalf of AASB Minnesota. I want to thank Representative Lilly for offering the bill before you today. This legislation is the product of much discussion among the automotive repair industry, and I'd like to tell you why the 600-plus members of AASB Minnesota so strongly support this proposal. House File 978 would prohibit insurance companies from owning repair shops. Our analysis is convinced that the vertical integration of the repair industry is not in the best interest of consumers and not in the interest of independent repair shops. By law, consumers are entitled to have their vehicle completely and safely repaired to its pre-accident condition. However, a conflict of interest arises when the insurance company that's paying for the repair also performs the repair. Whether it's properly identifying all hidden damage, selecting the most appropriate replacement of parts, or performing the manufacturer's recommended procedures. The independent collision repair industry has the training, technical expertise, and to ensure that the vehicle is restored to its pre-accident condition and that the customer is satisfied. Frankly, most insurers are interested in the same thing. However, there can be circumstances where an insurance company seeking to save money may be less inclined to have its in-house repair facility be as thorough in its search for needed repairs. And there have been instances where insurers, even in current market, have pressured independent shops used parts that do not meet the standard guaranteed to Minnesota consumers in state law. Left unchecked, an insurer's desire to save money and pursue the lowest cost of repair can easily jeopardize the integrity and safety of the repair. Another concern is that insurer-owned shops may ultimately result in consumers having fewer choices for automotive repair. Insurers are more likely to aggressively steer their insureds to their own shops and away from independent repair shops such as mine. Steering significantly undermines fair and healthy competition in the marketplace based on service and quality of repair, and less competition almost always results in higher prices. AASC Minnesota drafted this proposal for consideration more than 4 years ago. At that time, other states were considering this legislation, and the state of Texas passed a bill prohibiting insurer-owned repair shops. Just as we are about to move forward with the Minnesota proposal, a major insurer brought suit in federal district court in Texas to overturn the Texas law. Legislatures typically defer actions on bills when they are in the midst of court challenges, and so we delayed the action at that time. Ultimately, the Federal District Court and the Federal Circuit Court of Appeals upheld the Texas law. Then the insurer appealed to the Circuit Court decision to the United States Supreme Court, which refused to hear the case, and in doing so, upheld the lower court's decision. With all the federal court challenges behind us now, we now want to bring this bill forward in order to maintain the balance which currently exists in the repair market, a balance that has consumers, independent repair shops, and insurers all continuing their respective roles in a market that works well for the interests in most circumstances. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you. Mr. Chairman, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Schoonover. It's my understanding that we have Mr. Franson that desires to testify with respect to the bill as well. Mr. Franson, welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. My name is Doug Franson, and I'm representing the Property Casualty Insurers of America and Allstate Insurance. Separate representations, unfortunately, I only get to bill once. We have some concerns we'd like to express briefly about this legislation. The auto insurance industry is highly competitive, and you don't have to take my word for that. You can turn on your television tonight and look at the competing ads. We compete very hard for the consumer's business, and we offer the best product we can at the most affordable price. As a side note, that price could be a bit more affordable. There are some structural things within the laws that could be fixed to help out, but that's for another committee hearing. About 7 years ago, roughly, Allstate Insurance, my client, took an ownership in this interest in a body shop out east called Sterling, which caused great consternation nationwide. I believe that Sterling does have some branches. It was an attempt at vertical integration, a competitive move that Allstate said, let's try this and see if this works so we can better serve our consumers. Since that time, Allstate has not pursued that strategy. Numerous bills have come before the legislature over the years, and Allstate has always taken the position, which we'll take again, we have no interest or intent to expand, to come into Minnesota to vertically integrate or own any further body shops. But we do have a concern when you have limiting business models. The effect on the consumer, the lack of competition, and our ability to give consumers the best value. It's not a direct analogy, but that's why, in some respects, it's analogous to buyer leads coming to the legislature saying that Target should not be able to sell groceries. We don't believe that would be in the consumer's best interest either. So we do have those concerns. There is also a technical concern with this language. And that it raises the issue, at least with me, and I may ask for counsel's assistance with this. Can Allstate, which owns a body shop out east on the East Coast, continue to do business in Minnesota? We are licensed by the Department of Commerce. This bill is in 72A. And we have to obey the law as a condition of our license. Does the presence of the ownership interest in a New York body shop preclude thousands of Minnesota consumers, such as myself, from choosing Allstate to provide insurance. I don't believe that's Representative Lilly's intent is to kick all state out of Minnesota. But I think if you look at the strict language of the bill, that is a fair interpretation of the operation. We would ask that at minimum that be clarified and corrected.
Thank you, Mr. Franson. Is there anyone else who desires to testify? Seeing none, questions, concerns from members of the committee? Representative Lilly, final word?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Sorry.
It all works.
I'm a little worried about playing basketball on Friday. So, Mr. Chair and committee, I just clarify about his comments there, and it is certainly not my intent, and I'm sure we'll look at it and make sure that's taken care of. If it's not, then we'll fix it. But thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for that assurance. With that, Representative Lilly will renew his motion that House File 978 be recommended and passed and referred to the General Register. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, that motion prevails. Thank you. And with that, I believe we adopted the minutes, so we stand adjourned. We'll see you all on Thursday.